Welcome to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke, and today's guest is Winifred Davis. She is a poet, a writer, a spiritual counselor, a psychic medium, and shaman. She's also been a rescue soul for more than 33 years and has written several books dealing with the soul, its journey, and the truth that is reincarnation. Today, we'll discuss her most recent book, A Broken Record, History on Rewind, War Through the Eyes of the Soul in Poetry. Winifred. Welcome to the show, or should I say, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, John. How are you today?
I'm good, and it's always good to see you. I guess we're going to continue the Through the Eyes of the Soul series. Today, we'll talk about the latest book, and how does the soul define or actually see war in the first place?
War is a culmination of the struggle between the spirit and the material affinities. So man's advent on earth began in war. And as Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet, said, that we were going along as spirits, you know, doing what we were supposed to be doing. And we stopped by, saw what was going on earth, the processes. And then we decided to get involved. And as I like to say in Jamaica, they have a saying, you know, Stanas in a brought na dance, a fast mash it up. In other words, it's okay to look, but once we get involved, that's another story. And so we got involved fighting the other animals for their moles, that there were no moles for us because this was not our destiny. So we rebelled against our destiny. And so our advent on earth began in war. Rescue souls were sent to help the first wave of spirits who got trapped. When they came down, some of them got trapped. They loved the material affinities. And so a war developed between those rescue souls who decided to join the first set of souls and the ones who came just to do their job. So you had the sons of Belial, which were the ones who decided, well, you know, they're going to get in there. It looks really good. And the ones who came to do the job were the sons of the Lost One. So that's our first foray into war. It was not really Lucifer's rebellion.
Really?
It was
okay.
Our rebellion.
So we were trapped by the material affinities.
Affinities,
and it
yes.
wasn't our destiny to come here in the first place.
No.
And you also mentioned the sons of Belial. Or mm-hmm. Sons of Belial, which Edgar Cayce did write about. That was the faction that gravitated towards the materialistic things, the material affinities.
That's correct.
So since we mentioned the Sons of Belial, what does that have to do with Lucifer syndrome and the masks, which you've written about?
Mm-hmm. Lucifer has nothing to do with this. But because, you know, the popular thing is that Lucifer rebelled, you know, he was the angel, the fallen angel. So I just termed what the love of the material affinities are. I termed it the Lucifer syndrome, which is the cravenness for power. And that's why we crave the material affinities, because we want power, control over our brothers. And well, some of us believe that we have dominion over the fish, the sea, the land, and the animals. So that basically is the Lucifer syndrome. The Lucifer syndrome usually hides behind the masks. What are the masks? The masks are race, color, ethnicity, language, politics, religion, anything that separates us into groups, separates and segregates us. Those are the masks. And behind them hide the Lucifer syndrome.
As we have discussed before, you have many past life memories. In your experience, mm-hmm. which goes back quite a long time, have you seen anything that confirms that Lucifer actually did exist? Or was that the type of thing that was handed down through the ages by tablets, writings, or by word of mouth?
I believe Lucifer did exist. I have not queried, but I'm sure he did as an archangel. And there are many. But, you know, as some of the myths say that he rebelled against destiny. And if you think there are four poles, north, west, east, and south. And if he rebelled against his destiny, and he's one of the archangels that would be holding up the earth, so to speak, then I guess we'd kind of be just hanging on three instead of four legs, right? I do believe he did exist. And later on, I will query whenever my guides decide, they will let me know. So I've just used him, his name, because of the stories we hear. I've just used that, saying that we are the fallen angels, not Lucifer.
We are.
We are. Of course we are the fallen angels, exactly.
Okay.
Because we rebelled against our destiny, which was not on earth.
Someone who does astral travel that was on the show a while back actually likened what you just described as some people or souls that thought they were going to go on vacation, and they went to this place and got trapped into the 3D density of Earth. That's been explained to me in different ways.
Different ways, exactly.
It's different, but I've not heard anyone describe us as fallen angels, but if the description fits, that this was not our destiny.
Right. When we think about this story of Lucifer, we say he's a fallen angel because he rebelled against his destiny, right? Or some people say he tried to overthrow God, the creator, the supreme being. Another thing about the masks, each of us wear many masks at one time. For example, I'm female, so I'm wearing the mask of gender. I'm black, I'm wearing the mask of race. If you should go further into my genealogy, I'm actually wearing not just the mask of the black race, but I'm wearing the mask of different peoples, right? Religion, we wear the mask of religion all at the same time. Social status, politics, you know, what's your political persuasion? What's your language? What's your ethnicity? And each of these masks can be subdivided into different masks. So if you take religion, I'm Christian. I'm not Christian, but we are just speaking. Christian, okay, are you Catholic? Are you Orthodox? Are you Protestant? I'm Baptist. I'm Protestant and I'm a Baptist. What kind of Baptist are you? And so we can go further and further. So each of us wears many different masks at once, and we tend to shift to where the power is, and that's where I'll go.
So at what point, other than when we finally leave the earth and go back to the spiritual realm, do we get stripped of our masks, or is that the only time that happens?
No, the masks are stripped as soon as we die. They are irrelevant because you will come back in another lifetime. You will change gender. You will change religion. You might come back with the same mask, some of the same masks. It depends. Maybe you need to be born into a family to work out certain karmic duties then, or debts. Or sometimes you come back in a mask because you have a lesson to learn or a karmic debt to settle.
What's interesting about the masks, right? I've heard this described many, many times. When we die and we go to the in-between space and we make our soul agreements and maybe reconnoiter with our soul family, whatever happens there. I've heard that described as like someone casting a movie, casting the characters that are going to be in our next life. Are the masks part of that casting process, or is it something that we put on when we come back down to earth?
Well, they can be part of that casting process because, as I said, if you have to come back with a family and members of that family to work certain karmic debt or to learn certain lessons, and the family, with regards to their other journeys that they have to deal with in that particular lifetime, then you would be black, for example, right? Or if it is something that is part of your learning process, then the lessons will determine the mask that you are going to wear, right?
That's a very, very good point to help us understand this, which is multi-layered, the whole cycle, birth, death, reincarnation, casting, and then over and over again. You believe that there are different types of war, not just the physical variety that we are very aware of at this time, but also maybe a war that's fought on the spiritual plane. Is that true?
Yes, there are wars that are fought on the spiritual plane between spirits. There are wars that are fought between spirits and the living.
Great. Would that be like a poltergeist thing or actually spirits that have a memory and an agenda?
Yes, you have the poltergeist thing, and then you also have spirits with an agenda. And then when you're dealing with something like witchcraft, which does exist, and that's where a lot of us lose our lives sometimes too prematurely, because we do not know or do not believe that what you can't see can harm you. So yes, you can have that as well. And then of course, if we have bad thoughts or negative thoughts, then we do attract negative spirits and they act in accordance with you because misery loves company, and you become even more negative, and on it goes. So there's always that struggle going on as well. And then in terms of the physical wars, one of them would be with politicians when they have sagging political fortunes. Then start a war, you know, because everyone loves to rally around the flag. If they have, for example, a scandal going on and they want to create a distraction, start a war. And therein you see the selfishness, you know, people are going to die. Children will be left as orphans. The misery you create, but you don't care. You just care about your power, your political fortune, or getting rid of your scandal. And then, of course, you have the war on terror. You have war, which we must fight to defend ourselves. We cannot avoid that. And then, of course, if you are in bondage, then you are going to fight to lift off, extricate yourself from that yoke around your neck or the shackles around your feet. So yes, you have different types of physical wars and reasons for wars.
But what about the galactic beings? I've been told that there have been wars which go back in time, way back, eons actually. Wars between different types of star beings, or perhaps even star beings waging psychological warfare with humans.
The spirits of what I consider on the low rung of the ladder of soul evolution, they love misery. So they will, you know, like you're thinking of negative things, or if you are open to suggestion, they will make your life just exactly what you want it to be, a living nightmare. For example, you've heard those stories to gain wealth, but you don't have to do the horrific sacrifices that you think you have to do, which is ridiculous. But those spirits will promise you that, and then they know better, but they'll have you go out doing all these crazy things, and they're laughing. Those are the kinds of things that they will play with your mind. In terms of different star seeds, and I don't know anything about that.
I've heard the same thing about star beings that feed off of negative energy, which is exactly what you just described.
Well, it is basically the same thing. It's just, you know, a matter of names and how I look at it. And I, all my guides give me things, and, you know, keepers of the secrets and the collective. They like to make things simple so that we are not caught up in the whole dogmatic framework we are all trying to run away from with regards to religion. They cut away the fat. And so, you know, have different terms. Do you call, you know, supreme being? Do you call it a consciousness? Call it God? What is it? What, they or them? It doesn't matter. It's just all names. And if people are going to understand the whole of humanity, who cannot get into the trap of where you have to be specialized, you're knowing the names, you know, these terms, you know, they're basic terms, but, you know, it becomes so complicated and only a special set of people are going to know all these terms. And so they give it to me. They just give it to me lean without the fat.
You mentioned the collective. Now, you and I have talked about this several times, but for those that may not have seen your first episode, tell us a little bit about the collective and how that figures in all of this, in the cycle of war and the history.
Yeah, the collective, my collective, those are my guides. They would be my ancestors. They would be other guides from my different lifetimes on Earth. Maybe I might have met them, known them in other lifetimes. They've continued with me. They're angels and archangels and have different specialties and just a whole host, the great white brotherhood, different names that we have. Those are my collective.
I heard someone bring up the great white brotherhood the other night, and she asked me, this one speaker, have you ever heard of them? I said, no, I've heard of a metal band called Great White, but not the Great White Brotherhood. I couldn't resist. You had just mentioned a few moments ago, Source. I think you did say something about the creator as well. Talk a bit about how you say you believe that we cannot fight for the creator.
Yes, a lot of religious people, Christians, Muslims, Hindus, believe that they make holy war when we try to convert others. They believe that they speak on behalf of the creator in the sense that I'm fighting for him. I'm collecting money for him. You are an infidel or you are a heathen. And so you will not abide by the rules of the creator. So you fight. You have the evangelicals who say God says this and you're not doing this. Who are we really when we think about it? If this being, consciousness, creator, he is not supposed to be like us. If he is the supreme one, he is not going to be partial. Why do we think that we have the power to fight on his behalf? He doesn't need anyone to fight for him because he is what? Omnipotent. That for me is very logical.
He doesn't need us to fight for him.
Yeah, he doesn't need it. What we need to do is to look after ourselves, take care of ourselves and take care of each other. That's how you fight for the creator. That's what he wants to see. Not doing harm, you're killing others and you say you're fighting for the, I mean, that's arrogance. That is what we call Lucifer arrogance.
Okay. Is that the same thing where we have politicians aligning themselves with either a religion or God? Some of them have actually said certain politicians were brought here by God. If that isn't a red flag, I don't know what is. What are your thoughts?
Often we use religion, we invoke the name of the creator to give credence to what we are doing. We cannot really speak on behalf of the creator saying that we represent him. We all represent the creator because he created us, each and every one of us. And he's not partial to you. He's not partial to me. He's not partial to anyone. He has no chosen few. That's us.
He has no chosen few.
No, not at all. Because when we do that, we're saying he is like us and he is not. If not, I cannot understand how he would be God. Could never be. And if he's like us, well, is he black? Is he white? You know, is he Muslim? Is he a Jew?
Is he Democrat? Is he Republican?
Is he Democrat, Republican? Yeah. Is he Russian? Is he English? You know, for me, it's just not logical.
I think the religious element obviously has a lot to do with war. And a lot of us wonder, this endless cycle of war, is it ever going to end? But at the same time, you believe that war has no descendants. How does the fact that war does not have descendants have to do with this endless cycle?
Well, you have what I call historical grudges, victimhood, prejudices, and suffering. So you will have from generation to generation, two groups of people constantly at war, and it just never ends. And it might go on for hundreds of years. But if you look at it through the eyes of the soul, and I'll just use me as an example. In one lifetime, I was Catholic, and it was during the time, I've been Catholic in a couple of lifetimes, but I'm talking about a particular lifetime when the war between Protestant and Catholic in Europe was going on like no tomorrow. And so here I was in one lifetime as a Catholic. 50 years later, I reincarnate as a Protestant.
It makes perfect sense because you get to see both sides of the coin, right?
You know what I mean? And so here now, I am reincarnated as a Protestant, but I'm going to fight a battle against Catholics because my father was a Protestant and my grandfather was a Protestant. That makes no sense. So in this lifetime, first, Catholic, then another lifetime, the next lifetime, Protestant. And in that lifetime, when I was a Protestant, near the end of my life, I converted to a Catholic. That's why I say historical grudges and prejudices and suffering makes no sense. Because here you are, you're born. Sometimes you have no skin in the game. You might be, for example, Palestinian. And you have someone who is Jewish, but in other lifetimes, they were neither. Well, why are they fighting? You see where I'm going with this? And so therefore, war has no descendants. The only descendants war will have is if you happen to be living in that lifetime. But once you leave this earth, that's it. So there are no descendants. So all this war, these historical grudges that we're fighting, because if you look at some of the souls now, let's go back to the Middle East. If you look at some of those souls, you would be surprised to know some of those Jewish souls in another lifetime were Nazis.
Very true.
You would be surprised to know some of those Palestinian Muslim souls were Jews. So if we could only understand reincarnation and the facts, then we would think twice. But then again, maybe we wouldn't, because it's all about power. When you go down to the nitty-gritty, it's all about power. So what you have in a lot of these historical grudges and all the wars that are because of them, what you have are basically souls on the lower rung of the ladder of soul evolution who try to cheat karma. So they have not been through many incarnations to learn lessons. And they sense an opportunity to come back and then gain power. So they reincarnate as people with the different masks.
Right. So I meant to ask about this anyway. How exactly does someone cheat reincarnation? It's almost like they're trying to rig the game, as it were.
Yeah, they're trying to, but you can't. They haven't learned that you cannot. So they will just delay how many times they reincarnate. They'll just delay it, decide not to come back for like 200 years or 1,000 years. Just, you know, to come and, I hate using the word, but settle their karmic debts.
Okay. They're delaying it.
Yeah, they're delaying
it. It's like delaying paying a bill that you know you need to pay.
Yeah, exactly. Because they think maybe karma will forget about it, right?
Karma will not.
No, it will not.
Tell us about, this is really fascinating, by the way, some of the children who've come to you and others who are rescue souls, where did they come from?
In the book, I refer to this particular conflict going on in the Middle East and in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, and in Sudan. And that's a horrific one that's going on. Famine, and it's just absolutely horrific, but it's not on the front pages. And so I had all these little children dressed in different flags. They were wearing different flags, and they were led by this little one who was in a superhero. I think about it, superhero costume, and he was leading them. Right there, I knew some of them, they were lost. They didn't know how to get over to the light.
To the light.
Yes, they did come along with my guides, my grandmother. She's very prominent when it comes to children, help them over the light. But that little one, he was wearing the superhero costume, which meant that he knew where he had to bring them. So he's sort of like the shepherd. I'm sure there are a lot of other rescue souls who are probably doing the same thing around the world. So you have some of these rescue souls working with children. So you have children who've passed away. Now, my specialty, if you want to put it that way, is getting them over into the light. And then others are actually dealing with them here in the physical plane. So maybe kids who are lost, kids who have been kidnapped during conflicts and stuff like that. You'll have rescue souls working on that angle.
So you're kind of like a crossing guard in the spiritual realm and just saying, okay, mm-hmm. traffic stop, you can cross over now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and helping them, guiding them
Excellent.
Over. Because that's part of my job as well as a shaman, right? Where you're helping people and people will come to you. You might not know the person physically in this lifetime, but they find you because you've known them before or other spirits lead them to you. And they come and they announce to you that they're going. It's like when you had 9/11, I saw it like, hours before it happened, I didn't see that it was New York. But what happened was it was about 4 a.m. and I drifted off and I found myself actually in Jamaica with all these people who were deceased. And they were on gurneys. There were so many of them and they were wrapped in like a white swathing. And my stepdad was one of them. And he was saying, and all of them, they were saying, tell the world we say goodbye. Tell the world that we are gone. Tell them goodbye. And I remember jumping out of my sleep. I just sat up on the bed and I knew that it was not sleep, that I had astral traveled. And I said, I'm back. Immediately the phone rang. And when I went to the phone to get the phone, it was a friend of mine saying, turn my TV on. The second plane is going to hit the tower. And right there I knew. So they had announced, and my stepdad, he passed away a month later. So they announced that to me. Or I can have clients who I'd not seen for years. All of a sudden I get a phone call and they're in the hospital. They want to see me. So I go and they're waiting on me. As soon as I go, they pass because they need assurance. I'm thinking of one client I had many years ago. I was very close to him and I was in Jamaica at the time and they admitted him to ICU. He ended up on life support. And as far as the doctors were concerned, that was it. But his family said, they called me, asked me when I was coming back. They wouldn't give the okay. So I came back and straight from the airport, I went to the hospital. He was in ICU. They're supposed to check everyone, but somehow I managed to get in, went in, and I spoke with him. And at the same time, he made a signal because I knew there were some things he needed to settle within his soul with regards to some people. And immediately the hand moved and went like this. And the nurse had just come in at the same time and she was shocked because he had not moved or done anything. As far as they were concerned, he was gone. And shortly after, that was it. He passed.
It reminds me of someone that I spoke with very recently. She was a medium, but also worked in hospice. And her mission, as it were, was to help these souls cross over to the other side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what you do. And
it's very cool.
And she even talked about shared death experiences where she would actually go along with them to a certain point. So it's fairly obvious to see what the inspiration for the book was. But you also say the book was given to you in less than 2 days.
The poems, and there are 14 of them, and some of them are pretty long. And they were given to me in less than 2 days, so I didn't get any sleep. And for the 2 weeks that it took me to write the book, like everything, I didn't get much sleep. I would go 48 hours without any sleep, and I was wide awake. I had all the energy in the world, and I might sleep, you know, after 48 hours for 2 hours, and then it was back again. I got the poems, and then I said, okay, I'll just make a little book of poetry, because I write poetry, and over the 50-odd years I've been writing, I've written a lot of war poetry. I consider myself as being obsessed with war. I can't think of another word. I wish I could find another one other than obsessed. And so I would put them with some of the poetry, war poetry I've written with regards to South Africa and, you know, the whole nine yards. But then I did that and then, no, they weren't done. Every time I would say, okay, so I'm going to finish today, I found myself just writing. And when they were done, that's when it was done. And that was my grandmother. And in the book I wrote, I acknowledged her and I wrote a dedication to her. She was an extraordinary woman. And the book is dedicated to the children who have passed on during the different wars. The last 20 years or so, especially in the last 10 years, we see that it's like children are suffering. It's like wars are on children. They're targeted. That's very close to my heart and my grandmother. So she, along with the guides that I work with, who deal specifically with children, with war and justice, they are the ones who gave me the book. And it was dedicated to them and the children and to all children all over the world who my grandmother taught me. And she always believed that every child had a right to live with their family in love. They had a right to dignity, to an education, to shelter and clothing and food. They had a right to play. Children should be allowed to play because they are children. But unfortunately, most of the world is a Dickensian world in which it's really difficult.
Now, the children, does that have anything to do with the warriors of justice and Pacific persuasion that are contained in these poems?
Yes, it's for the children.
I think we have a lot to unpack here, and honestly, we're just getting started. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to continue this discussion mm-hmm. in a part two, or in your case, actually, part three. We will definitely do that. Winifred, thanks for coming back to the show. How can our listeners find you online?
Okay, my website is Naima Inc. That's NaimaZimainc.com.
Excellent. I will put that in the notes in the transcript as well. You've been listening to Closer to Venus. I'm Johnny Burke. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing. You can also find more information on closertovenus.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.